Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 7 of Capes and Commentaries. I'm Nathan Kennedy. I'm joined by Tank Tops, Tyler Baker. And last week, we kicked it off with some Ninja Turtles, the first episode. Today, we're going to watch the second episode, Enter the Shredder. But before we get into this, Tyler, sir, how are you doing today?
Doing just fine here. It's a rainy-ass Saturday in our neck of the woods here.
Yeah, isn't that a bummer? I hate that because at work it's all nice and sunny and hot like all week. And then I'm like, all right, 2 days off. And it just rains and it's cloudy the whole time. And I'm like, well, all right, at least I can stay inside.
It's a reason to be inside to do commentaries for kick-ass cartoons as opposed to being sunny out here. My ass should be sitting on the dock at the lake right now. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, good reason to be indoors. We'll hang out. It's dreary outside. We're going to go to the dreary sewers of New York City here as we enter the Shredder.
Yeah. And we got the link down below in the description. Heads up, because it is the Daily Motion link that we tend to put. Might be a lot of ads in this one, because I checked out the link to watch the episode last night, and I got bombarded in about...
They're doing that a lot more on their website. They've packed in more. I guess they realize people are coming to them a lot more for stuff, and they're just bombarding like four or five commercial breaks with two ads and like a minute a piece. Like, damn it, man.
Yeah, each one of those was 30 seconds, and it was Star Wars, and it would just play the same one immediately after it played the first one. This happened 7-8 times. I was like, no, not again.
Well, we have Daily Motion Plus. You should own the DVD of this by now. You know,
true.
We'll be using the DVD, the Lionsgate release from many years back. But if you don't
I got it right here.
Yeah, that's what you should be watching technically. But if you don't have it, check out Daily Motion and join us as we count down from 3, 2, 1, play. I always love that rush, especially the fast panning shot. Because they did that in the arcade game, which was just such a fantastic nod when the arcade game came out, and they threw in nods to that.
Yeah, this was always an intro, like even on those VHS tapes that I had from Burger King, and you know some of the other releases. I never skipped. I never fast forwarded through the intro.
Me neither, not once. I mean, plus any great show, you were always happy to sit through the intro. I mean, from. Transformers and G.I. Joe, of course, He-Man, Thundercats at the high bar, and Turtles is right up there with Thundercats and He-Man is with interest. Batman the Animated Series, Spider-Man, all that stuff. I mean, RoboCop. That's adds to the flavor why we continue to celebrate these cartoons after all these years. I mean, the total package. You know, these cartoons were the Lex Lugers of animation. It was everything. You didn't just like the characters in the story. You loved the introduction as well, and that was a big part of great animation.
I think it's funny right there how it's Leonardo, but the
color. Yeah, as a kid, when I would see those title cards, that threw me for a loop. I'm like, what the hell is Mikey doing with Leonardo's swords?
How did you let that happen?
I always like the bunk beds that they're all sleeping in here.
Yeah.
With like their bandanas laying off to the side there. And just seeing what the turtles go through, like the part of their lifestyle, which is not something you got to see a whole lot. Something as simple as their sleep. And then wake up, and you got to practice before breakfast. It was just fun to see part of their daily routine of what, you know, because most stories that it takes off with them, you know, watching TV, seeing something on the news, or here's Donnie's newest invention, you know. But seeing this, it adds a little bit of an adult flavor to it, that this is part of their daily life, what they do every single day before they go into action. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I also enjoy about this episode, too, is it immediately follows up on the events of the first episode. You don't get that sometimes in a lot of cartoons where there's a little bit of continuity from episode to episode.
Yeah, because this show, they don't, I mean, because a lot of them are one-shot adventures, and that's what most kids' shows were back in the 80s and 90s. But it's you do appreciate that. As a kid, it didn't matter. It was fun to see nods to other episodes, but you really appreciate continuity as an adult. And this was probably one of the best examples of that, especially as I saw these two episodes back to back.
Yeah. And I kind of wouldn't mind putting some breakfast cereal on pizza. That seems
well,
like
you
that
definitely would. Yeah. You being the cereal junkie that you are.
It'd be interesting. Put some cornflakes on a pizza or something.
Yeah. The turtles made any concoction of pizza quite tasty. And I think this was the first time I was introduced to sushi. Like, I didn't know what the hell it was, but when Splinter offers sushi to April in the first episode of this episode. I'm like, what is that? I just never heard of it. And as we're watching this, getting our glimpses or hints at the Technodrome for the first time, which was such a staple. It's up there with, you know, Snake Mountain, one of many Cobra's lairs in the G.I. Joe series. It's such a staple in children's pop culture, you know, yeah, in terms of popular of a villain's lair.
Yeah, and a toy that also eluded me for many, many, many years.
Well, it still eludes me, so at least you've got yours after all this time. Hell, I don't never had the Techno. And boy, the commercials, and it's everything you could have hoped for. It was a jam-packed playset.
Yeah, I'm just kind of surprised that it wasn't bigger than it was.
That's kind of the thing with most toys, that you kind of expect the playsets to be monumental in size, especially when in the shows they are. This is a traveling Thunderdome. I mean, it's just a big glow running around the sewers. And of course, this is a kid meeting Krang for the first time, as Shredder's doing it. It was just kind of going along with it. Like, it didn't have, it was just like, who is this, you know, this character? What was your first impression of Krang, so to speak? Like, I was accepting everything this cartoon's throwing at. I didn't question a single thing because I was just, okay, I buy all this.
Yeah, no, I never questioned it either. In fact, he always made me kind of laugh a little. He still makes me chuckle just as,
"Whoa."
Yeah. And it was a nice little touch that I don't know the voice actor's name, Tyler. I'm pretty sure you probably
know. Yeah, I cannot picture. A lot of the Turtles voice actors, other than Cam Clark and Townsend Coleman and Rob Paulsen, a lot of the cast escapes me, but I could point him out to you if I saw a picture of him. But he, you know, he did Slash, he did Krang, I think he did Baxter Stockman. I mean, his Slash was terrible because I hated Slash being presented as a moron. But this animation, like, as we're watching Krang and Shredder, there's so many, like, details, like in Krang, like the brain, like the veins in Krang's body, like, there's a lot of details in that. And Shredder, the intensity in Shredder's face, and this, you know, as we will come to see, Shredder becomes the slipping on banana peels villain. But these for early episodes, especially this one in particular, he is a force to be reckoned with, like a ninja master in his own, but a mad scientist. And, you know, not something we really probably would want to see in a new canon of Turtles. But in this, you know, when I look back at it, like, why am I okay with seeing Shredder as this, essentially a mad scientist? It just hints at a ninja master, but within the movie and the newer series and stuff, he dabbles in science, but other people handle that for him. He's not really, you know, as we will see, he creates Bebop and Rocksteady in this. But
that's why I can't wait when Larry joins us, because I want to kind of talk to him more about the creative process. As we're watching this here, you know, the things that come to mind, he's sitting in the room with a lot of this going on, you know, he's doing the storyboards. At what point, who made the call? It's like, well, we're going to have to go a little lighthearted with the Shredder, you know, just when it comes to voice acting as well, you know, do they get to put their own little touches on it? Is it all by the scripts? There's a lot of questions that I have.
Yeah. Earlier. I mean, the animation industry is fast, especially of this time period, you know, when you've got your story department, your animating department, you got your inking, you got your painting, you've got your voice acting, you know, because everyone's going through all these, and the scripts are being changed, and the actors are bringing stuff to the story that enhances this, and the character designs are changing from, you know, concepts to, you know, to the final look. And I always love these drones that we would see in the video games as well, which I was like, oh man, it's just like those, which I don't know the technical term for these robot drones that steal the Bebop and Rocksteady animals here. But this was such a wild sequence to me as a kid. It was a very captivating sequence, watching all this go on, these robots steal these wild animals that were very ferocious to me as a kid.
They did come out with the toys of these guys, right?
I remember they had done the you know what, I don't think they did these drones. If they did, I completely apologize, because I take great pride in my turtle knowledge, but that's one thing I don't know if they ever did.
I'm trying to remember, because I feel like I have a memory in my head of seeing it, but it definitely had like more stickers on it.
It well, wasn't just... the Mousers came with stickers, I believe.
Maybe I'm thinking
of
the Mouser.
They did a single Mouser that was a lot bigger. It was not like the size that Playmates would do for the 2012 Turtle series. And Mikey's still on the show here. I always enjoy doing stuff like this myself, so I thought it was always cool watching Mikey play Tarzan.
I said this before we started recording, but I kind of feel like the animation does take a bit of a hit from the first episode, especially in this last half here.
I don't know. So far, there are certain episodes, yeah, like there's a lot of animation errors and stuff, which is to be expected in this kind of animation that's hand-drawn. It's going to happen. But, I like all the details on the hoodlums room. They got food on the wall and stuff like that. There's been food fighting and stuff. But so far, I'm not kind of seeing a drop in animation, or at least in terms of quality.
I think it's only like in a few parts. Now the voice of Rocksteady is also Leonardo, correct?
Yeah, Cam Clark. Okay. Yeah.
I didn't know if we brought that up already, like last week or anything.
Oh yeah, that's the same voice actor, but I couldn't tell you who did exactly Bebop's, and I hate that for people who listen to this, and you know, and I love knowing behind the scenes stuff, and there's certain shows I know better than others. I know only small bits because I tend to watch more Turtles. And not necessarily dig behind the scenes of the series as much as I have with like Thundercats and Spider-Man, G.I. Joe, and especially He-Man. But
this is always funny to me how he got in that suit.
Yeah,
and still has. I mean, is he just wearing the mask and that's it? Because he would have cut through.
I'm assuming he's just wearing the mask to cover the face up, because you always want to keep the, even though in the first episode he takes the mask off. For a brief moment, but I guess it's just to kind of constantly keep up that mystique, which as a kid I didn't think was goofy, but there's no way in hell he's put on all the shred gear and got that suit on success without tearing it to hell. And this is a fun sequence coming up here, kind of what you'd expect. It's New York life, what these guys deal with all the time, that they're not going to come into some right in the middle of, a heavy corner there. Uncle Toto. I used to like, why does he say Uncle Toto instead of, Uncle Henry? That's me being the Wizard of Oz.
Wizard fanatic. Of Oz nerd.
Yeah. I remember the trading cards I used to collect this series too, and the shot of Mikey looking at Ray's Jumbo Pizza was one of the trading cards I had. I don't know why it sticks out, but that's just one of those.
I was about to say that is a very vivid memory like that. That's the one that really sticks out to you still.
Yeah. I mean, I collected that series, but not as much as the movie cards. The movie cards I found to be a lot more fascinating than the cartoon, because with the cartoon, I just wanted to watch the show and game with the toys.
Yeah. I remember when I showed you that binder that had all those movie cards in it?
Yeah. my buddy Matt Sterner did give me it's almost a complete set of the actual movie trading cards.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for free. It was something I think he had extra. I'm like, hell yeah, I'll take it. Let's look at Mikey smile. these outfits too. I just thought, hey, Cecil, what's a hat? Just then, and their laugh here.
I really like Don. I like Donatello's jacket.
Yeah, I think Mikey looks the most badass in the group right there with the leather jacket. And the spikes and the orange glasses. They all look cool. See, of all those goofy-ass variants we got, why the hell didn't we get these variants?
Yeah.
Like Street Smart Donnie and Street Smart Mikey. I mean, God, that'd have been so... those are variants I could get behind.
Breakdancing Leonardo.
Yeah. I mean, hell, that'd have been awesome. And, of course, I always felt so bad for Splinter when the sequence happened as a kid. I'm like, oh, no, they got him. And, for people, I'm sure people are like, well, how the hell does Splinter get captured when he's a ninja master? He's the one that was, because it doesn't give the turtles nothing to do if their master's not captured. So yeah. I don't want to hear any of your bullshit. That's people being technical, trying to be cute and funny and witty and trying to find something wrong with stuff that's better than you. one hell of a drop. Did you imagine they slid on their
shells?
Yeah,
they, down I mean, there? They would have to. Otherwise, that would probably break their shell.
I like Shredder taunting them. I used this reference in my Horde, in my Leech mini comic that I did with Carson, that indeed he is. that's a line I took to give to Hordak. If people who own that Leech mini comic, I stole from this and put it in there.
Yeah, I think Oh, gee. What do you know? Got it right here.
Look at that. Nathan's got it right there. So, yeah, so if I'm going to steal, I steal from the best. And I give credit to David Wise's script for End of the Shredder. And I always loved the sequence of being through the perils of the Technodrome. This was a blast. I'm surprised we didn't get a lot of this in the video games. Like, yeah. You're dealing with, you know, cannon fodder of foot soldiers and robots and stuff, but some of this stuff was quite, like the robots, like the giant, you know, various like spider robots they fight, that all those drones and stuff they fight, was a kick-ass sequence. And to see, you know, Raph impaling him with his size there.
Yep.
Something you just don't get to see a whole hell of a lot with the Turtles, is actually use the weapons to cause a lot of damage. It's kind of just hard to believe. I mean, I'm quite sure your parents sure as hell didn't have an issue with violence in animation. Oh, here we go. Such interesting selection of robots. Like, my favorite one was the spider one.
Which also, why were there not toys of this?
Yeah, all these. I mean, hell, that spider drone crawling right there. Now, that would have been an awesome Foot Clan toy. All these robots. I'd have bought every single one of them, or wanted them, had they advertised them in those fantastic Ninja Turtle commercials as a kid. Which I love watching those on YouTube for fun, because I was at the age where I did get to catch a lot of those commercials. I mean, that would have been awesome. The blade spinner,
man. Just waking up Saturday morning, eating some cereal, watching some Turtles, seeing those cartoons, and then knowing that, hey guys, we're gonna be going to Hills. I'm like, yes. Go to the toy aisle, and there it is. Those are the toys that were in that commercial, are there on the shelf, and you have to make that tough decision. What am I going to pick this week? Because you could only get one toy. Like,
there was never an occasion that you could get more than one. I mean, for me and my brother would watch this on the weekday mornings, and we would see the commercials for the toys a lot in the afternoons, I believe. And, I mean, it was that and seeing what your friends had at school, which is how I discovered Slash and Triceraton for the first time, was Randall Bishop, when I was in kindergarten, brought him and showed me. I'm like, oh, my God, who is that? And who is that? And he had Mikey, and I didn't have Mikey, too, which that was a big deal to me, too. And I did get Slash and Triceraton both at Hills. So those were two fond memories for me, getting those guys. On Saturdays, of course, too. That was always the big day. You always would go to Hills on Saturday. We never went on Friday or Sunday. It was always Saturday.
Yeah, it was always. I bet there was a point in time where you and I crossed paths as kids in that store.
Yeah, it had to have been. As many times as I could go down, I could make a podcast just talking about all the toys that I bought, from He-Man, G.I. Joe, Turtles, Spider-Man, the New Adventures of He-Man I discovered at Hills. I mean, there was the Street Fighter G.I. Joe line I discovered at Hills. I mean, there were so many things. Powers of the Force, the Star Wars line from 94-95. I got that at Hills.
Missed that store so much.
God, I do too. And everybody praises the hell out of Hills. Yep. Everybody. Not one person's like, man, I always prefer Magic Mart, which Magic Mart was good to me too, but nothing was as good to me as Hills was.
Yeah.
So many close calls in this. As a kid, it was just like, oh, man, how are they going to get out of this? And here we are with our building up to their first encounter with the Shredder and Bebop and Rocksteady. This is a good moment. A lot of good dialogue here, like very serious.
This is when it all sort of comes together.
Yep. This animation of Shredder and the dialogue he's given is just perfect. Which, yeah, a kitchen utensil. Yes, that does make sense that they would say that. I like that shot of the Turtles. They look so serious.
Yeah.
One of the few moments we'll see when everybody's taking this story very seriously, and they're not adapting to all the bitching and complaining parents of the day.
Almost feel like now maybe with these turtle commentaries that we do, we should just kind of go in order. Maybe we can find that exact moment where it sort of took that turn into a more lighthearted.
I feel like the rest of this first season, I feel like all the episodes are quite good. I mean, the first, like the Shredder gets splintered, hot riding teenagers from Dimension X. I mean, there's some good. I mean, it's a very, very short season, but it's, I think, in terms, I mean, some of the most memorable episodes are in this first season, along with, you know, various others. But I think this first season, they're all winners. Every one of them. Like Rocksteady's shirt's a little too short for him. His little belly sticking out.
Yeah.
Boom.
Now, did you prefer one over the other? Did you just take them both as a total package?
They were a package to me. I mean, I had Bebop as a kid. I didn't have Rocksteady, so I always had this yearning for Rocksteady simply because I didn't have him. Same thing with Michelangelo. That was the one original turtle me and my brother didn't have. I had Donnie and Raph. My brother had Leonardo, and we didn't have Mikey. We had variants of Mikey. I had Splinter. I had Shredder. Derek had Shredder. But Rocksteady was the only one, other than April, of the original group that we did not own. And it was not intentional. It was just something that we either didn't come across or was not given to us for Christmas or birthdays. And I knew people that had Rocksteady. But to me, they're a package. Like, and that was important to me to have Rocksteady because they're a pair. Like, you don't have Bebop without Rocksteady and vice versa.
Right. I think I had a slight preference for Bebop over Rocksteady.
I don't know. And plus, them in the video game, in the first video game, it was such an exciting and almost kind of exhilarating and kind of terrifying because you're fighting how, I mean, they were always so hard as a kid. I mean, of course, it was always, wasn't too hard to get past Rocksteady. Bebop was a pain in the ass to beat as a kid. Bebop. God almighty. He was so tough. And I don't know why. You kind of figured they'd be equally tough, but I mean, of course, when you play it now, Rocksteady still can kick your ass. But they look so great. Like, they're such great mutant villains. They do come up with some great villains on this show of that are, you know, byproducts of mutation and stuff like that. That's what makes the show so great and the toy line so great. Of course, as the toy line gets deeper and deeper, it gets goofier where you kind of, and I like to embrace all characters from Turtles, but man, some of its stuff, I will say, of all my beloved toy lines, the later waves of Turtles are a little hard to swallow because they don't feel like they were trying that hard. They come off as just, yep, lazy as hell. Like
Basketball Draft and Canadian Moose.
Yeah, all that stuff and Scratch and Hotspot. They felt like baby toys as opposed to Mur-Dude Hotspot. Now, Hotspot was cool. He was that dragon. The Dalmatian. Ah, damn it. I forgot the Dalmatian fireman. I can't remember what his name was. He's one of the hardest.
I thought it was Hotspot.
Maybe it was, okay, then there's the
because Hotspot and Scratch, who is the cat and the prison,
yeah, the cat.
Those are the two most expensive turtles.
Okay, then I guess I'm getting Hotspot for some reason confused with the dragon, the red dragon. That's a character. I can't remember what his name was, but not that it has anything to do with the show. But damn, it's, I'm embarrassing myself with my turtle knowledge here. I hate that because people who listen are like, damn it, man, it's this guy. Get it right. Of course, I've done the same thing when I listen to podcasts. People can't get the stuff right. I'm like screaming in my car. Get it right.
Yeah, but they're also probably sitting there too looking it up on their phones.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, it's this guy.
This would have been a cool sequence for the video game, like fighting in the zoo. You know, it's kind of surprising the zoo was not included and because you fight in the sewer a lot and the streets and things like that. But I think the zoo would have been an interesting battleground.
I think the one thing that came close is in the Turtles arcade game for NES, that snow level may have taken place.
That rat in the leather jacket at the end of the snow. Now, why the hell didn't we get a toy of him?
Yeah.
And I can't remember what his name was because he was just made for the game. But he was when I would see pictures of him, there's Larry Houston's name in the credits there.
Of course. He's just going to turn up pretty much in everything we watch.
Yeah, which, you know, he's always attached to gold because that's what Larry is. He's the man who manufactures gold and does it so effortlessly. That's a character from the game that I was always fascinated with because I could never get to. I think the first time I got to him was when I played the game with you. Really? We did. Yeah, that was because it was tough playing that game as a kid, man. Plus, I only got to rent it. You got it because you got good grades in your report card.
Oh, it's the best day.
So I didn't have that luxury of playing it. Me and my brother would try and play it, but it was hard to get past. I think we did get past Bebop a couple of times, but not enough to really get past the third level of Baxter and the Mousers. It was just tough.
The key is the jump kicks.
Yes. I have since beaten it with Nathan, as an adult, which was a great feeling to have accomplished something like that. In Contra, thanks to Nathan, beat Contra. Of course, you had to use the Contra code.
Oh, of course. There's no way
a la we were Batista.
We weren't going to beat that in three lives or however many.
We're not the angry video game nerd. But Enter the Shredder. So, yeah, if we may just have to go in order.
I think it would honestly kind of be the best way to do it. Like I said, we can see that turning point when it went from being mostly serious to, Shredder slipping on banana peels, as you say.
But hell, I mean, there's so many. I think if we get past the first season, there's other episodes like the next season where I'm like, I would probably just be, I don't think I could go in order because I would want to do Meet Casey Jones, Usagi Yojimbo, Enter the Fly. I mean, just so many kick-ass episodes that introduce us to so many staples that, as kids, like those three episodes in particular were big, big, heavy favorites with me as a kid because it was so exciting to see Usagi, Casey, and Baxter become the Fly, Baxter Stockman, which, like, oh my God. And I didn't have that as a kid. Oh, I didn't have Casey Jones as a kid either. I know.
So deprived.
I know. I was deprived. Nathan's getting all this stuff and he didn't even ask.
The perks of being an only child.
I know. It probably did have something to do with it. However, my brother got Usagi and I got Leatherhead. And then once we got home and opened them up, I'm like, I really should have gotten Usagi. What the hell was I thinking? Because Leatherhead was so much smaller to the ground. And Usagi could stand him up and pose and put swords in his hand. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, you couldn't do that so much with him. Yeah, because he's just...
He's a great-looking figure. Now, as an adult, I always loved Leatherhead. I did as a kid, but I guess in terms of play value, Usagi was better than Leatherhead as a kid.
Right.
I think we got that at Walmart. That's because that was the early days when Walmart was not the supercenter. It was just your standard department store.
And the toys used to be much better there as well.
Oh, yeah. The toys were just jam-packed with X-Men figures and Turtle figures and getting the Mortal Kombat action figure line there and the Batman Returns line. I remember seeing that there. I mean, a lot of good memories when Walmart was like Hills.
Yeah. And then,
And now it's the broken wasteland of empty pegs, crummy-ass wrestling figures, and what garbage of Transformers variations has been dumped out and the popular, trendy, like little small figurines that don't do anything, that can't really have any play value, don't even look cool from a collectible standpoint, that kids are like, oh my God, I gotta have that because it's a Shogun Ninja Bellhopper. whatever. But that's our Enter the Shredder commentary, and if you enjoy that, stay tuned because we'll be back with our next episode as we head to prehistoric Earth. And that's all we'll say. You don't have to wait very long to find out.
So if you like this, make sure you hit subscribe, hit the bell, get the notifications, and click the links below. Got a bunch of stuff that we'll have down there for you. So, on to the next one.
On to the next one.